Welcome, everyone. Yeah, I think that's probably good.
Oh. I have to save the right link because it's just always something with the links that I get. So the last one was for Bodhicitta, so it won't let me in because that's an old module. I don't know how many of you all are doing Zoom with your work, but Zoom fatigue is real. Linda, do you want me to admit people? Because I see signs like, you want me to? Okay. But you can also do that, right? Okay, it says two people have entered the waiting room. Joshua has become. Okay.
Okay, sorry. Oh, I couldn't figure out how to mute YouTube. And there's about a couple minute delay. So, yeah, I figured it out, though. I think we're good to go now. Sorry. Oh, every time I sign on, I learn something new.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, all right. All right. How's everybody doing out there in Zoom and YouTube land? Good. I'm glad to see one thumb up. Two. Yeah, it's a strange time. So we are going to start. Is there somebody else who wants to come in? Okay. So just I appreciate y'all's patience while we do weird things like let people in from the waiting room and figure out YouTube and other technical.
I think I'm fully on it now, Steve. Okay. You're good to go. Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's okay. Got it. So how many people here, and Linda, you can help me by seeing if people raise their hand. I know on another platform I use, you can raise this little digital hand, but I don't know that with Zoom that we have that. But if there's anybody here for the very first time, let me know. Like, this is your very first time tuning into a class.
One thing we could do is down at the bottom of your screen, there should be a choice for reactions.
Right.
And you have the option to do like a clap or a thumbs up. So if you're here for the first time, you could do a thumbs up.
Why don't you do a thumbs up for us so we can see what it looks like in your little Hollywood There you go.
Do you see it?
Yes. So if it's your first time, do a little thumbs up just so I am aware of that. Okay, I don't see any thumbs up. Okay.
A lot of folks.
And then
we have at least one. Several folks don't have their video on, so.
Okay. All right, I see a couple. Thanks for letting me know. So this is the second class in this ongoing series of classes. Each module is a different topic, and this topic is samsara and nirvana. And so it's really designed so that you can come in almost any place in the sequence and get something, hopefully. But it also is building. So some people have been attending these classes for quite a while and are doing all the assigned readings and take it, you know, to a whole other level. And part of my challenge is to juggle it so that if this is your very first time, you'll be able to understand something. And if this is your second go round in the whole Discovering Buddhism course, you'll also get something. So someone's written that there's no sound. So if you also have no sound, you know, also you can use the chat. If you don't see the chat, move your cursor and you'll see a little icon at the bottom that says chat. And then if you want to chat privately to Linda, you'll be able to see this little box and select people to chat to. Or you can just chat to everybody. I'm just not going to pay attention to it because I'll go bonkers. But Linda is going to be monitoring that. So if you have specific questions that you want me to take later on, in fact, I'm going to minimize the chat because I will go crazy. Okay. So you can email, you can chat with Linda and she'll accumulate some of the questions and I'll stop for sure a couple of points to make sure that we cover them. So the way that we always start is by setting our intention, and we're going to talk a little bit later about intentions because that was part of the homework. But we understand in Buddhism that everything depends on intention, not only in Buddhism. I mean, we understand that I work for the court system, and we certainly, even though I'm not an attorney, but, you know, if you just look at any courtroom drama, you will certainly understand that intention counts for everything in the criminal justice system, right? What intention did the person have? You know, does that make it first degree, second degree, manslaughter, all of those things. So then on a very positive note as well, intention kind of directs your energy. And so setting an intention before we have this discussion about Dharma practice is super helpful. And again, we're going to talk a lot more about this. But take a minute to think about why you've even come here. You know, it's a rainy Monday. There's some of the things that you could be doing. And yet, you know, you've spent the time, which we are all grateful for, to attend this. So think for a minute about what you personally are hoping for. You know, for some people it's curiosity and, you know, to have a little bit more peace of mind, to try to help their mind through the pandemic, to meet other people who are also searching. You know, whatever it is that's your personal goal, you know, I want to refresh my mind about some of these topics because it's super helpful to me to keep that in the forefront of my mind when things are difficult. So I want to focus on that, and then I want to try to raise it as high as possible so that if I'm able to achieve this goal, this wish, how many other people around me will be affected? You know, just even on a very practical, mundane level, if you achieve that goal, there will be a ripple effect and the people around you will benefit. So then again, we try to amplify this even more, that the more and more that we can clean up our minds and eventually attain bodhicitta and then enlightenment, it'll be like an incredible, you know, inner nuclear bomb has just gone off that everybody will benefit from. So trying to set the intention that that's why you're here, that that's what you are going to be trying to bring to mind over and over again as we move throughout the class, this will have a very powerful effect. So setting that intention, and then we're just going to lead you through a short meditation just to kind of shake off the day and try to center our mind. So much, you know, even knowing that other people are doing this at the same time, though we're not in the same room, when you can actually really feel the collective energy of a group meditation. But here, knowing that all of us have come together at the very same time to do this, to talk about this, to think about this, to meditate on this. So get into a comfortable seated position. If you're in a chair, you know, feet on the floor or cross-legged in the chair. And then you'll want to have your arms out a little bit from your body. So you know the posture that you see of the Buddha sitting with his hands like this, you know, one hand on top of the other. This is a hand mudra meditation. Bring this down right below your navel. To keep your arms out a little bit away from your body so that you don't collapse into your lungs. Again, you're trying to have a very straight spine, straight posture to benefit your breathing and to keep your mind sharp. And so you're going to even close your eyes, or you can keep them a little bit open. And eventually we're going to bring all of our awareness to our breath, which will help to keep our mind from running all over the place. And the point is to bring our mind back to the count of the breath so that it will settle down. That when we really try to relax and let our mind just stay in one place, we notice how busy it is or how lethargic it is. It's kind of one or the other. And the point of meditation, it's not a failure when your mind wanders. It's actually something to celebrate that you noticed it. That you noticed it, and then gently, the way you would with a young child, bring it back to the count, back to the object of focus. So that you're developing this ability to focus. And in seeing that your mind has wandered, this means that you've strengthened your ability to also see when your mind wanders throughout the day to something that is actually going to cause you difficulty. So this ability to notice what the mind is doing and to say, no, no, over here, is a powerful thing, and is exactly why we meditate. It's not to eliminate thoughts. It's to be able to create space between them. And so in a minute when I stop talking and we're counting the breaths, you might tonight or in future practices notice how your mind starts to develop a thought, almost like you can start to feel it like a wave. Or if you do yoga or any other breath practice, you can start to feel when tension enters your body. And so like that, you say, here comes a thought. And if you're watching it instead of just following it, you'll also see it subside a little bit. Just like throughout the day, you don't really notice your inhale or exhales until you do, until you pay attention. And when you pay attention, you'll notice there's a pause in between the inhale and the exhale. There's also a pause in between the rising and subsiding of thoughts if we're very quiet and we're paying full attention. Then slowly we can begin to build more space between those thoughts where we can rest. But it's just more spaciousness, more ability to focus. So again, it's not that it's thoughtless. So we're surfing on the ocean instead of being pulled one way or the other. Okay, so now for like the next 5 to 7 minutes, I will, I don't have a bell here, but I'll speak in about 5 to 7 minutes and bring you back from the meditation. So begin to count your breaths. Put all of your awareness on what it feels like to breathe. Bring all your awareness to just the sensation of air coming in and out of your nostrils. And as you inhale, you'll count one. And then when you exhale, that's one. It's the second part. Then the next inhale is two. Exhaling two. And on like that. You can do this up to 10 and then start over, or if you prefer 5. And again, when your mind wanders, bring it back and start the count over. It's not a contest. It's really trying to settle into this observation of your mind. and slowly open your eyes and stretch. Take a minute to readjust. Oh, I don't know about you, but I feel better. This class, the topic of this is samsara and nirvana. And most of it focuses on samsara. I was teasing with Geshe-la, like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if the whole class was like what it will be like in nirvana? Although I suppose it is, because we're studying in depth the elements of samsara which aren't present in nirvana. So that's the good news. And, you know, we can come up with a very quick definition of samsara, which is just, you know, the kind of the imprisonment of cyclic existence, uncontrolled cyclic existence. But the more complicated definition, which I gave last week, I shouldn't say complicated, just all-encompassing. I'll read again. What we call samsara or cyclic existence is the continuity of contaminated, afflicted aggregates. To be reborn in samsara means to be reborn with those aggregates. As humans, we have 5 aggregates. When these aggregates are contaminated by the afflictions, they are referred to as contaminated, afflicted aggregates. We'll get into that in a minute, but that's an important piece to kind of understanding what is going on here in samsara and why. Understanding why then helps us understand how to end this, how to get out of this. So we'll get to that in a minute. And again, if you're new to this, I like to have fun in these classes, and I like for this to be very practical. But I also have to blend in some of the lists and the details. So I try to go back and forth, like looking at some of these and then applying them to our everyday life here in North Carolina. So then the other definition that we talked about a lot last week was renunciation. So renunciation, you could say, is the wish to escape samsara, because samsara is uncontrolled. You know, it's uncontrolled return to this cycle of existence over and over and over again. Even if it gets a lot better, it's helpful to almost look at it like it's a prison sentence. And so next time you might get a really nicer cell. Or if you spend all this life trying to rearrange your cell and get a cell with a window or something, you know, or have better roommates, cellmates, but you're not out. You haven't gotten out yet. And so then maybe you do find a way out. I'm really fascinated with stories of people who do escape prison, or North Koreans have escaped their prison camp. And then when they get out, they often develop this huge wish to be able to get everybody else out. So that's the bodhicitta wish. So you've gotten yourself out and you're out of this prison cell. But when you were in there, you made a whole lot of friends. That was your life, all these people there. That was your family. And now you're out, but you know, you'd really like to be able to go and get them out. But first you need to figure out how to get out. You need to dig that tunnel, have that escape route, have everything planned. The difference between us and prisoners is that most prisoners don't have to develop the wish to get out. They wake up every morning, every day. They know where they are. Most of them want to get the hell out. It doesn't have to generate this wish to get out and to get everybody else out. Whereas we often have pretty nice, comfortable, especially for us, we're not in the middle of a war zone. You know, we have what's called I can't remember how many there are, 8, you know, the leisures and luxuries of a life that allows us to practice Dharma. And so meditating on this allows us to realize just how fortunate we are. And so it's, some of the meditations are on how fortunate we are, and some of the meditations are on reminding us where we are. And so then it's up to us to know all the time, which meditation do I need to apply in which situation? Because the point is to keep my mind focused on the goal and doing all the things possible to create the causes for me to be able to get out and return to help other people out. Okay, that's a lot of words. What I was trying to get at is renunciation, which I talked about this definition that I really like, which is that because in the West, we often think of a renunciant as someone who lives away from the world, off in a cave, you know, giving up their Nike hoodie, whatever it is. And I really like this definition that renunciation doesn't mean going away from the world. It means knowing that the world goes away. And if you know that the world goes away, you relate to everything around you and everyone around you very differently. You know, hopefully in a way that's not clinging to it. But, you know, Geshe-la often gives this example. You know, when he first came to this country and we traveled different places, you know, we went to Washington, D.C. once and got these hotel rooms, and he just was such a nice hotel room, right? But he said he wasn't, he knew he was going to be leaving it. Didn't mean that he didn't enjoy it for those couple of nights. But he knew this was not his home. He knew that he'd be leaving. And so he used it for what it was and then had no issue leaving it. And so it's like that. If we know that this is temporary, can we use this life in a very profound way without getting lost in and forgetting what it's for and thinking that it is more permanent? So renunciation technically is the aspiration wishing to attain liberation. So it's giving up suffering. Renunciation, what you're giving up when you're renouncing is the suffering. But it doesn't, it's not always that clear because, you know, we're running after things often that we don't realize are actually going to bring us suffering. And then the other definition is liberation. What's called liberation is the freedom from bondage. And the bonds are karma and affliction. And it's our afflicted aggregates, which we'll cover that in a minute, which create the actions, which create the seeds, which create the results that keep us here over and over and over again. So being aware of all these things, while it can be very complicated and we can get really in the weeds on a lot of this stuff, what it's meant to be always, always is empowering. So that was one of the most helpful things I ever learned from a Buddhist teacher, was that if at any point you're feeling the opposite of that, if you're feeling overwhelmed or sad or depressed or whatever by your studies, you need to, you know, talk to somebody to help you tweak it and move it in the right direction, because every single bit of it is meant to be empowering. Every single piece of it is meant to empower you. And then it's up to you to know, because you know your mind, which parts do you need to kind of put down? Which parts do you need to pick up? Which, you know, which parts to focus on so that you can be empowered? Okay, so I'm going to go over the aggregates again, because we can never talk about them too much, since basically they are what make up your boat. If your life is your ship, you know, they often use this as an analogy of getting across the river to liberation, right? So this lifetime that we have is like a boat. And we need to know all the parts that make it up so that we can point the boat in the right direction over and over again. So hold on a second, because I also have answers to somebody's question about the aggregates. So the five aggregates are form, you know, the form of anything, but the form of us. Feeling, which is really just sensation. You know, you like something, you don't like something. It's really simple like that. Perception. And perception in this case is the ability to discriminate between things. You know, this is a table, this is a cup, this is, you know, hot. It's just perception. And mental formations, which is what somebody asked last week, if it's the, I'm forgetting the word. One of you asked me if it was the same thing as...
They asked, is the mental formation category the same as compositional factor?
Yes, it is. Thank you. Thank you. And really what it comes down to is the mental formations or compositional factors which create our actions. It's our will, it's our volition, which creates karmic seeds. And then the fifth one is consciousness. And this includes our, what we call the three gates of body, speech, and mind, or the sense gates, you know, like the eye function, the ear function. It's all the different consciousnesses. And talk about weeds. I mean, there are so many different categories that we're not going to get into those, but you could get into all these different categories of consciousness. And then what's not under those categories of consciousness fall under mental formations, of which there's like 49. There's multiple categories. And it's fascinating to study. We're just not doing that right now in this class. It's very long and complicated, but I encourage you to look at it. It's fascinating. But at any rate, these five aggregates are the base that holds the label of you. So similarly, you know, with my cup, there would be different parts of this cup. There would be different parts of the cup which come together that we can then say is a cup. So it's the same thing. And it gets fairly complicated as well. But it's an interesting thing to start thinking about the difference between the label and the base. And so Karen asked me some very interesting questions today about that. And the point of it's a lot, and it's covered a lot more in depth in the module on emptiness. But the whole point of looking at what makes up anything, the parts that make up something that then holds the label, is to try to shake up our belief that it exists inherently. And when we use that term, you'll see that a lot in Buddhism, that something is merely labeled or it's merely imputed. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It means that it doesn't exist in the way that we often think about it, which is that we all fall into just this almost unconscious, it's not even necessarily belief, but that things exist from their own side, that things exist inherently. Things exist. They definitely exist. It's not all that they're like, you know, people talk about them being illusion. But I think even the quote, Karen, that you sent me from Lama Zopa Rinpoche, which is in the reading, by the way, if anybody is following the reading, it's that things exist like an illusion. They don't exist exactly the way that we perceive them. And so an easy way to start looking at it is the impermanence of things. Karen was talking a little bit about that. And how things have parts. Everything comes into existence based on causes and conditions. So everything that comes together has aggregates. And so I mentioned our five aggregates. And anything that comes together comes apart. It doesn't stay forever in that form. And so everything that comes together has these aggregates that can then contain the label. And you can't have one without the other. You can't have a base without a label. Even if you're pre-verbal, you're still labeling it somehow in your mind. You're still perceiving it. You're still, you might have a different label for it than an adult. An ant is going to look at something very differently than a dog and than a human. But it still has some mental formation about what that is. And so so you can't have a base without a label, and you certainly can't have the label without the base. That's a whole huge discussion. But the whole point is to start looking at how things don't exist exactly the way that we see them. And the point of that is that we start relating to them differently so that we aren't creating as many negative karmic seeds as we possibly do. So, I mean, even on a very mundane level, if I can see, say I'm getting upset about something at my job, if I start to question it using some of this that I've just been describing, how things come into existence based on causes and conditions, I understand that my view of it is very different from somebody else's view of it. And, you know, So that kind of, again, helps me shake up that this is, doesn't exist inherently exactly the way I see it. That's because of certain causes and conditions. So this empowers me now to try to see, do I want to change this? What do I have in my disposal to try to change the way that I'm viewing this so that I'm so not so locked into my view that I then create causes for future suffering? So I don't know if that makes sense, but I'm trying to break it way down so that we can make it very practical. So, for example, the hotel room. Almost everybody going into the hotel room would not be alarmed when, you know, Tuesday rolls around and the checkout time comes and they've got to check out, because they walk into that situation knowing, you know, I booked this room, I'm going to use it for a couple of days and I'm going to leave. It doesn't exist the way that your home does. If somebody came in Tuesday and told you you're leaving, you know, it would be a whole different reaction. So if we start to relate to things, maybe that wasn't the best example, but it's trying to help you shake up that view that you have that of something being so fixed. And I feel it's also at the same time trying to empower you to say, what do you want to create here? So if my view of, I don't know, let's say I'm really hoping to, okay, well, I know one. They're moving all the offices in my, moving people around to different offices because the group next to us is expanding. And some people feel this is kind of unfair. And our group is always being asked to move. We've had to move several times. And if I just tell myself not to be upset, I'll probably swallow it and get a stomach ache. And, you know, that's not really going to be helpful. If I, you know, just try to, like, be nicer to another person and let them have something better, again, I don't know how long that generosity is really going to last. But if I start to shake up my view of things by looking at the labels that I am using, I'm trying to get back to this whole thing about the base and the label, and shaking it up and seeing that things don't exist exactly as fixed as I believe. And so, I think we can come up with a lot of mundane examples, but I think, Karen, you were also asking about it kind of in this larger sense of self. And if we, I see the comment. Yeah, definitely looking at impermanence is the entree into looking at emptiness. It's definitely the entree into examining emptiness, to understand the impermanence of every situation. Absolutely, 100%. I'm going to try to find some other ways, too, to talk about the difference between label and base, because something that I learned early on that helped me a lot, because I got very confused by it. I thought I really liked this idea that the label and the base weren't the same, and yet they depended entirely upon each other. That was fascinating to me. And it's not that things don't exist, because we can't just switch labels. I can't just start calling myself something else that I'm not. I can't just label this cup television and turn it into a television because it has to function according to its base, you know. So how does something function? Does it function according to its base? Of course, things can have multiple functions, but you can't just switch things by relabeling them. That would be nice, but it doesn't work like that. And so we start to just start to see things a little bit differently, and finding ways to use this idea of emptiness, impermanence, and emptiness to change the way that we relate to things so that we are not creating all the negative karmic seeds that just continue cyclic existence. So let me go over some of the afflictions again, because we're talking about how our aggregates, you know, how we have these afflictions which compel us to return to samsara over and over again. So we talk about the six delusions: anger, attachment, ignorance, pride, doubt, and wrong view, and how these are the things that create the problems, which create the seeds, which bring us back over and over and over again. And so the point is to try to clean ourselves up as much as possible so that we're not creating all these karmic seeds which bring us back here. So let me just pause for a second and see if there's any questions, because I've been really rattling on. So Linda, is there anything in the chat I should stop and talk about now?
No, there's not anything in the chat. There's not, doesn't look like there's any questions from our YouTube stream either. But if anyone does have any questions, oh, yeah, Sean, go ahead.
So I'm just trying to see if this is a good example of what you've been talking about. Is I'm a teacher,
mm-hmm.
I've been living in the world of teaching virtually,
mm-hmm.
and it's been frustrating and not overly satisfying because of when I think about the motivation of why I like teaching as mm-hmm. far as making connections with the kids.
Yeah.
And if I think about going back and I think about living in now, it's just very upsetting. But if I think about it as this is temporary, this is going to get better. And by January, maybe we won't be virtual teaching anymore. And I won't be sitting in a room with 11-year-olds with masks on. And that really helps me kind of get through it as far as knowing that I'm going to get past this.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly, yeah, just definitely meditating on the impermanence of something is so powerful, right? And so that's what you're describing, right? The temporariness, the impermanence of this, you know, we always say that nothing good ever lasts, but either does nothing, something bad doesn't always last either. So meditating on the impermanence of something is very powerful. Exactly. It's a little bit different than meditating on the base and the label, but it's such a complicated topic. I'll just say this, because Karen was talking about this, and Karen, this is very powerful as well, is to know that the way that you label something can be very different than the way somebody else labels something, or the way something changes in times because of the conditions. I remember showing Geshe-la, for those of you who don't know, you know, the teacher at the center, Geshe Gelug, lived in my house for 9 years when he first came to this country, so we got to... I taught him English, some English, and some Americanisms. And we were watching a documentary about the Vietnam War, and the veterans had returned to Vietnam, you know, decades later, and they were commenting on what a beautiful country it was, and they had never noticed how beautiful it was. And he was saying, well, that's because the mind, you know, their mind was in a war at the time, so how could they see it as beautiful? But there was nothing really different about the land itself. But it was the... You know, at that time, their mind could only label it as hell, because that's where they were. But nothing had changed from the side of the land. And so seeing that, you know, one time when you go to visit a place, it may look very different than the next time you go to visit a place because of the conditions around it. And so then what we're really trying to do is create better conditions for our consciousness, our stream of consciousness, which is way bigger than just this lifetime. And it's way, so using that example of the class, exactly, if you can expand it to you as a consciousness, even beyond this lifetime, so that, you know, at some point you will be evolved over here, you know, and that will give you courage and inspiration to keep moving towards that in the same way that it does with your class. So trying to take what works on this kind of mundane level for us to understand these, and then kind of blowing it up to this bigger picture of our bigger evolution towards enlightenment is exactly the point. So last week we talked a little bit about motivation, and the homework assignment was to think about other places in your life where intention and motivation make a big impact. And I just want to pause for a minute to see if anybody had any thoughts on that this week or anything that they'd like to share about how motivation in your daily life makes a difference. Uh, this is part of the problem with Zoom is I can't like stare at anybody and say, come on, you can talk about this. I can think of one for myself, but Linda, is there any chat I should know about with this?
Not yet.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, it'll continue to be your homework, but I will tell you. Okay, Chris, and you know you can unmute yourself and share something.
Yes, Christine, if you want to unmute, you can ask your question directly to Deep.
So I thought of one, and that is, you know, yeah, go ahead, Christine.
I was going to say that I find that taking refuge every day helps me to set that right intention.
Yeah. And then do you feel like you're able to carry that throughout the day?
Yes, absolutely. A lot more so than when I was not taking refuge on a daily basis.
Okay. So I thought of a very mundane example, but it helps me. So, you know, anytime I go to the store, the drugstore, wherever, and I put on a mask, when I'm doing it just for myself, it feels very different than when I'm also thinking about what I'm not spreading. So if I'm just doing it for myself, it feels hot and uncomfortable, and, you know, the mask starts to go up into my eyes and is really annoying. But I got into an Uber the other day because my car had broken down and I had to take an Uber to get to my car. And I put my mask on, I had gloves on. I get in the car and there's this older man driving and he doesn't have his mask on. And I was like, dude, you know, what's up with your mask? And he said, I'm not afraid of dying. And I said, are you afraid of spreading it? I said, because I'm actually wearing this mask for you. And that kind of surprised him. He was like, oh. And so then I started thinking about that more and more when I'm in stores, you know, that otherwise I'm just so focused on my health. Like, you know, you stay away from me and, you know, I'm going to wash and do this for it. But when I'm really thinking about everybody else in the store too, it just changes the whole feeling for me. And it makes the inconvenience of the mask, you know, really minor. So like that, you know, thinking about intention and how it changes whatever you're doing, you know, even if, like there's this one yoga exercise that I really hate, but when I think about how it's going to help me as I age, you know, that it changes it. So keep thinking of these, and I think it might be helpful for other people to hear it as well. Because we kind of forget to examine our motivation throughout the day. We're just on autopilot, like there's nothing to do except go, go, go. And so I think it's helpful to stop and ask yourself why.
Absolutely. Hey, Steve, there are a couple of other comments in the chat now. One is following up on the mask and why you were wearing it, your motivation behind it. Vivian says that masks should be printed on the outside of the mask. I'm wearing this for you. There probably is a mask out there somewhere like that. And then a couple of other, Vivian also says in regards to the motivation question you asked, I often ask myself, why do I want to do this or say something? I ask if it is driven by a benefit to others or is it for myself?
Right. That's wonderful. Yeah. And it can be both. I mean, the whole point is that they can be both. I remember kind of the reverse of that. I once asked Geshe-la, you know, something. I can't remember what the situation was, but I was basically asking what I was doing wrong. And he said, you're not including yourself in the four immeasurables or in the wish for other beings to be happy. He said, you have to start with yourself. You know, you have to include yourself on that. So when we're wishing for the welfare and the benefit of other beings, we are in that group. And so, you know, starting with ourselves and using ourselves, and, you know, if I don't get COVID, the people around me won't get COVID, right? And it's the same thing what we did with when we started. You know, if I achieve my goal for tonight, if I achieve my goal for calming my mind, expanding my mind, enlightening my mind, all the beings around me will benefit. So it's like that. So let's keep, you know, playing around with really interesting mundane examples that will help. So speaking of that,
there is one more, Steve. A student is saying the motivation in daily life is, I'm motivated by safety. I want people to like me. When I believe they like me, whether or not they do, I feel safer.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's and also a motivation to become enlightened makes me want to practice is another comment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly why we meditate on the downsides of samsara. You know, sometimes suffering is such a large word. I remember that some of the translations of the words are actually more like unease. So it doesn't have to be like, you know, what we might conjure in our head is this massive suffering. It's just that it's unease and there's not rest in samsara. And so meditating on how it's not restful then is meant to propel us towards what is, rather than just making us miserable and depressed. It's actually meant to be, again, empowering. This is all meant to be empowering, not depressing. But it's also a reality check. So when we talked about like the three types of suffering, and then I showed you the Jerry Seinfeld clip about how, you know, we spend all our time like, I got to get to the airport. When are we going to get on the plane? When am I going to get my seat? When is it going to take off? When's it going to land? When are they going to open the doors? Is that, that is exactly how our whole life is, you know, that it's very rarely are we in the moment. We are migratory beings and moving through all of these different things, whether they're pleasant or unpleasant. And that there is another way. There is another way. We just haven't really been in that place. So sometimes it's hard for us to get our heads around it. And that's the whole point then in studying the different types of suffering, is so that we see, oh, nirvana means that these things have come to an end. This kind of unease has come to an end. And we are in the process of accumulating the causes for our own enlightenment. That's what we're in the process of doing, is trying to accumulate the causes for that. And one of the things I remember being so psyched by when I read it was just how much incredible merit you can create in the moment it takes to light a stick of incense. It's our body, speech, and mind that's creating our future enlightenment. It is our very aggregates that are the tools by which we will liberate ourselves from this prison. It's not something far out there and all these things we have to memorize. It is this very life which is our boat out. So to me, that's super empowering. You know, we don't get out of the prison by something other than our very self. And so that's also when I was telling you last week that when Geshe-la said, you know, in the moment of being cold, it's the jacket that offers him liberation from being cold. That jacket offers him only suffering in the summer, right? So when we talk about these afflictions, it is as they arise that the moment of liberation from them exists. It's not when you're in a very peaceful meditative state that the liberation from anger is arising. That hopefully will contribute to your mind being free from anger. But it's as we start to see our impatience arising that we have the moment to liberate ourselves from it and expand our ability and our karmic seeds to be free of that affliction. And so one of the first teachings Geshe-la gave when he came to this country and came to North Carolina was on patience. It was this long weekend teaching, and it was so powerful. And I remember going home that night thinking like, I can't wait to start to lose my patience, because that's when I'm actually going to be able to do all these things that we were talking about. And a lot of, you know, the traditional Tibetan Buddhist way of meditating on this, are these kind of lists. Here are the downsides of losing my patience. Here are the benefits of keeping my patience. And that, you know, once you've lost your patience, you can reel it back in, but you haven't had that chance to put these things into place because it's too far. So you need to practice on something that's going to work. And so in the work that I do, I'm always thinking about what helps people change? How do people change? And I feel like I have an answer, which is that people change when they have guaranteed success. When you have guaranteed success in something, then you take that step and then you take the next step. So whatever it is, if you're, you know, a bodybuilder, you're not going to go from A to Z. You know, you have these small successes, and as you see the success, then you take the next one. Well, same thing with this. If you're trying to conquer anger, you need some guaranteed success. You don't start with the hardest, most difficult person in your life first. You start with something simple so that you can build that and then go, okay, now if I can do this here, I can do this here and here and here. So that night that I got home from the teaching, I was, again, very excited. And that night I had an opportunity to practice it because my dog kept waking me up. And like by the fourth time I've already went outside with her three or four times when she woke me up, and here she comes again. And I could feel my you know, impatience just rising up with me. And I thought, oh, here it is. Here's the chance. And so I took her outside, saying all the things that I had done in the practice, which was, for example, I remember one of the things to remember is that the event has already happened, right? The event is, she's already woken me up. You know, losing my patience isn't going to help anything because she's already woken me up. I don't want to lose my peace of mind because it will be a lot harder to go back to sleep. So I was just going through this kind of list as I took her out, and I sat with her for a minute while she peed or whatever, and then I brought her back in and I went to sleep so excited that I had stretched my patience that little bit. So what I want us to do, and we're going to get into separate Zoom rooms in a minute to do this, is to think about, so this first affliction being anger, I don't think it's any mistake that it's the first one, because it's certainly something that we all have a lot of experience with, and it's just a challenging time right now. There's a lot of it's a lot of challenges. So
Steve, if I can interject real quick, there is, speaking of challenging times, Naga has posed a comment and question. I don't know if you want to tackle that right now, okay. But it does kind of piggyback on what you were just leading into. She says that she thinks it's that living in this present American conflict is causing unease. For some people, using people's suffering for the political gains. And then, so that's a statement, but her question is, isn't it selfish to seek your happiness when people are suffering?
No. I mean, the only way people are going to be able to take refuge in you is if you're happy. So you have to be careful about what's the definition of happy. You know, that's the thing to go back and really meditate on. It would be selfish to say, I'm just going to go. I mean, we need a real concrete example, but everybody's happiness. I think one of the things that I see on such an incredible level right now is our incredible interdependence. We're getting like a master class in interdependence. So what happens in another part of the world absolutely affects us in this part of the world. You know, I'm from New Orleans, so New Orleans had a lot of really bad COVID, you know, because a lot of people came there for Mardi Gras. So, you know, the events all around the world affect all of us, and we're getting such an incredible masterclass in that. It's not that we, again, it's not that we deny ourselves. I mean, again, renunciation doesn't mean giving up happiness, but it means expanding it. So when Geshe-la's monks first came over to this country and they were in my house and I would take them to the grocery store, they were just in awe about how much food there was. And what they did is they made all these mental offerings. Because again, remember that it's our body, speech, and mind that are creating positive karmic seeds. So while they were buying groceries and eating the food, they were also making all these mental offerings. And if you can do something to alleviate somebody's suffering, do it. Or do what you can do. But joining their suffering, like I have a friend whose teenage daughter, you know, feels that somehow it's helpful to others if she doesn't take this good job that she was offered and stay unemployed. And because she felt bad that other people didn't have that kind of job offer. But it actually is not really helping anybody, especially her parents, if she doesn't take a job. So this is, again, where our motivation comes into play and where, you know, we are in samsara. Doesn't mean that we don't work for people's to be free of suffering. Doesn't mean that we don't work for people to be free of suffering. But and this is something I really want to make sure I said today, so I'm really grateful for your question, that samsara, this life on earth, is this realm is seen as one of the best realms for cleaning our act up and being able to create the causes for enlightenment. That we have just the right, probably, proportion in our, we have the ability here to be able to really put into practice things that will create our liberation. So I find that hugely inspiring and helpful. And it's a tough place to be. You know, we've landed in a tough place for reasons that we created in future lifetimes. But it's also in this life we have such an incredible opportunity. And the question Geshe-la gets a lot, too, is how would a bodhisattva view suffering? You know, and so we know that, you know, a bodhisattva has just the most incredible compassionate heart ever. They also have the wisdom to know what to do. So it's those two wings that we're always having to look at, you know, how to deploy them. We don't have, at least I can speak for myself, I don't have enough of either to know the right thing to do in each situation. But I know that, oh, if I just do all of this, what might look like compassionate thing for somebody, it might backfire. I don't have the wisdom to know exactly what to do. But if I can do something, I certainly will, even though it's going to be kind of puny in comparison to the masses of suffering that we see. But a bodhisattva would kind of see it with a much more big picture view. And yeah, that's all I can say about that. But if your happiness is harming other people, well, then that's a problem. So if I say, hey, I'm going to kick all these people out of their offices because I would be happy if I had all those offices, then that's a problem. But that's not what we're defining as happiness, right? So really looking at what is happiness, and then I think you might have more of an answer to that. So let me know if that touches or helps at all with your question. But also, you know, you can also think about the times that you have suffered. Who was it that helped you? What helped you? Sometimes it's just the person on the street smiling at me that helped me. I'm having a really bad day, and there's somebody over there who's kind of calm and centered, and they just say, yeah, I know it's tough, or they just smile in passing at me. If they just, if they were suffering in the same kind of way I was, I really don't know that helpful. Okay, so is someone trying to say something?
Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I think that explains.
Okay, good. Good. That's the right question, so keep meditating on it. Let me know what happens, okay? So we're looking at one of the the afflictions, which is anger, which, as we know, can create just incredible problems. And so what I want you to do in the groups, and we can do it a little bit right now, but to think about, and if you have a paper and pen, you can jot some things down so that you can talk to your group in a minute, because then we're going to end with a meditation on anger. I think we have enough time for this. So, okay, but first, before we do this, just remember that the definition of meditation is to familiarize yourself with something. So when we're meditating all day long on all kinds of things, but the point of, you know, single-pointed meditation or a guided meditation is we're making our mind focused on that, on a topic, a positive topic. But, you know, like, we're all doing a lot of meditation on all kinds of things. If I'm thinking a lot about COVID, I'm meditating on COVID. I'm familiarizing myself with it. So when we do meditations on, like, the antidotes to anger, then we are really, that's what we're doing. We're trying to familiarize ourselves with what are the antidotes that I can apply in the moment that I'm about to lose my patience or become angry. And so, yes, I just wanted to get that in there. So think for a little bit about how has anger or aversion. So aversion is when you're just averse to something and you want to avoid it at all costs. And it causes problems. Okay, so that it's not just averse to anything, but you're averse to something and it's causing problems, causing this kind of negative mind state. So how has this been operating in your life? Maybe recently. Let's narrow your life to the last couple of months. How has this been operating in your life? Recall the times, the kinds of situations that trigger a strong aversion or anger in you. And where does anger and or aversion kind of feel in your body? Where do you feel it? What does it feel like? Is it in your chest, your throat, your stomach? Is it different at different times? And what does it feel like? How does it land in your mind? Is it kind of fast or is it kind of slow burning? You know, what are the thoughts and the kind of the story that comes into your mind? I mean, obviously you can pick one or two, you know, if it's on the road versus something in your office versus something in your home. What are some of the things that come up that you notice your mind telling you? And what kinds of suffering have you experienced or created for yourself and others because of this? What kind of suffering that you and others create when driven by anger, such as, you know, what you say, what you do physically, what you don't say? So we're going to try now. I don't know, Linda, how many people are on YouTube? Because we can't do this with them.
So there are 7 people on YouTube, 7. And there's 22, but that includes us on Zoom. So 19 on Zoom, not including me and you.
So Zoomers, we're going to try to put you in rooms like with 4 people. And so you should be able to then see each other if you want to use your video, and I want you to answer those questions together real, you know, you have about 10 minutes, so sorry, it's going to be kind of fast, but just to have a conversation, because normally when I teach at the center, we have a lot more small groups, and it's helpful, so we're going to attempt, as Linda's going to attempt, to put you in these rooms, and then YouTubers, just stay here, we'll talk a little bit after we do that. So, Linda, are you ready?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to have Zoom do it automatically rather than me do it manually. And then if I do that, Steve, will you and I be able to move from room to room, or will we be stuck in a room?
I think, well, you and I are going to stay here, but I think that our voices can go to the room when we want to. And some of us, I can post the questions. Yeah, I can try to write them here.
You want about 4 people in each room?
Yeah, that would be good. I think in the rooms you'll still be able to see the chat. So I will go ahead and write the questions.
Okay.
Well,
so now hopefully you all can join your room. And again, if you would like to turn on your video, you can turn on your video. I would definitely turn on your audio so you can chat with each other.
Yes, please. Oops. Okay. I have an invitation to join breakout room 4. But I'm going to say it later. All right. So I posted the questions. Can you see them, Linda?
Yes.
Okay.
I can. Can you hear me, Steve?
I can hear you, yeah. So does it give you a way to go and check on those rooms or like to speak into those rooms?
No, it says broadcast a message to all.
Yeah. Okay, you don't have to do that. I was just wondering, as the host, you do have the ability to broadcast. So like in 5 minutes, we'll tell them they have a few more minutes. We'll have to tell them they have 5 minutes. And then 2 people are still with us, Robert and...
Yeah. So, yeah, it's... What's that, Steve?
Because we're 4 people.
Yeah, it looks like... I don't see where I was assigned a room. You were assigned to breakout room 4.
Yeah. I guess Robert and Deborah. Can you hear us, Robert and Deborah?
Have you joined the room yet? I think you have to join the room first.
Oh, they do or I do?
You do, if you want to chat with them.
Oh, I see. So maybe they're in a room by themselves.
It looks like it.
Okay.
And I'm not anywhere on the list.
Okay.
Sorry.
So
learning experience.
Can you 2 people see the questions that I wrote?
No, but I can type it into YouTube real quick.
Okay. Or you want me to, well, I was going to maybe even copy it and paste it.
Oh, yeah. I can probably do that. Yep.
Okay. So for those of you on YouTube, Linda's going to try to present, post the questions for you so that you on your own can be thinking about this while we wait.
Okay, questions have been posted on YouTube.
All right, thank you. Such a multimedia event here. Linda, how are you doing with all of it?
I learn something new every time.
This is the first time you've been to breakout rooms, right?
The first time I have joined them, but I have not facilitated them. So. Right.
Yeah, I do.
And I'm assuming that since you and I are talking outside of the breakout rooms, we are being recorded on YouTube.
Okay, probably. I'll behave myself then. Thank you.
Well, I was thinking I could try to, we could discuss your questions. How has anger or aversion been operating for you recently? Yeah, so in that regards, I am a bit of a neat freak, and I was out of town for a few days and asked my son to make sure he cleaned up after himself, and he did, but it's just not to my standards. And I know that I have an issue with this, and it's something I'm working on, and yet still that anger and aversion still arises, and it's a challenge to try to own that, you know, own my thing and not expect others to have that same thing that I have.
Yeah.
And I can feel it. Like you ask, how does it feel in your body? And it's very, you know, it's a very physical feeling. Like I feel like my blood pressure is rising and, you know, sometimes I'm so upset about it. I want to cry. And, you know, it's definitely a challenge.
Yeah. I feel like everything is kind of at a tipping point because there's just so much, you know, going on in the world. And so I feel like everything's high, you know, everything's up here. And then I go to like the store and somebody is being very, kind of inconsiderate, you know, just like sneezing on you or something. It feels like it's just overload, you know. Yeah.
It really is. I mean, I feel like all senses and feelings are very heightened at this point because we're just living under constant stress with the COVID-19 pandemic right now. So,
I can get very upset, and upset is okay. I mean, it is an upsetting time, you know, watching some of the politics. I can feel so frustrated. So I have to monitor and keep in control how much I watch. You know, like, okay, I want information. I want to be careful that I'm putting into my mind the best information, not just things that's agitating me. And I want to be informed. So I try to find the best sources to be informed and try to do something. You know, I also try to watch things that are inspiring or something I can support. And so, yeah, there's kind of stories then. So, okay, what triggers? Well, you already talked about one trigger for you. Are there others?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, that one's definitely just been one that's so recent. There's no one else on YouTube has posed any questions or comments, but actually I'm not sure that what I posted came up because I have a question from a YouTuber that says, can you read the questions for YouTubers? So the questions are, how has anger or aversion been operating for you recently? What kinds of situations trigger strong aversion and or anger? What does it feel like in your body? What kinds of stories does your mind tell you? So sorry about that, YouTubers. I thought it had posted, but apparently it didn't.
So can you broadcast into the rooms that they have 5 minutes left?
Yes.
Okay. And then the last one, like what kind of stories does your mind tell you when you're kind of engulfed with this anger or aversion? You know, we're not talking about once you've caught it and been able to apply the antidote. We're talking about when you're stuck in it.
Yeah. For me, it always goes to, what's wrong with me? Why can't I control this?
Oh, well, that's interesting because I often go to, what's wrong with me?
Well, that happens first, but yeah. But then it's like, oh, why do I let this bother me so much? Why?
So actually, that goes to what I was saying about the meditation, that, you know, celebrating that you notice it. Because that really is something to celebrate and go, okay, wow, I noticed it. I noticed it. Rather than you didn't get, you know, yeah, you wish you noticed it earlier. But if you noticed it earlier, actually, and never fell sway to it at all, while that's fantastic, you probably wouldn't celebrate that because it wouldn't. I know when sometimes people tell me, oh, you're so patient. I'm like, really, this isn't bothering me, you know. But if when something's bothering me and I exert patience, then I feel like, yeah, now I'm being patient. But when it's not a trigger, it's not patience. It's just I'm different than that person, you know.
Right. Right.
So when somebody says something very different from my political views, then I get certainly, I can get very triggered right now, especially now. And the story my mind will tell me is just, you know, how dangerous this person is and how awful that view is. I'm just lost in this story. It has taken me far away, you know. I mean, I try and I'm able to catch it, you know, but when I haven't caught it, that story has unwound pretty far. and then it, you know, then there's all kinds of other stories attached to that. And, yeah, I'm pretty far gone.
It's a challenge, and especially so right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so we'll talk about the antidotes, because there's antidotes to that, actually. Exactly that. So there's all these antidotes. I'm just going to have to give them as homework, because there's plenty. And I need to get, you know, this is where, with DB, I look at this one site where I can look at the information for teachers, but I'm never like, what are they seeing? I don't know exactly what they're seeing. So I have to get the link from you this time and really go and look and see what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. That's why Karen had written me saying, you know, she had a question about the readings and she typed in the quotes and I was like, wow, I need to go and pay attention to that.
Yeah. I'll email you where we can see that.
Okay.
So you have that. Should I go ahead and close out the breakout rooms now?
Yeah. Till time to come back.
Okay.
They finish their sentence or whatever. Hopefully they were talking to each other.
All right. I'll give 1 minute. I just gave a 1 minute warning. Well, if Robert can hear me, he was in our group and unfortunately, I guess he was just listening to our conversation, which is fine. I apologize, Robert, that it didn't turn out you were in a different group. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close out the rooms. Ready? Okay, they have about 50 seconds to get out of their room.
So they're all back now?
Not quite. There's a couple of breakout rooms that look like they're still chatting. The breakout rooms will close in 33 seconds, though.
Well, for those of you who are here, were you able to talk to each other and share ideas? Okay.
Yes, it was interesting conversations.
So it was good to be in a breakout room? Because trying to experiment with this, good. It's I really prefer more interaction than Zoom allows, so I'm glad that you all gave the breakout rooms a try.
Looks like breakout room 2 is still chatting.
Oh, there you go. I don't have to ask that if it worked.
All right. We should have everyone back now, I think.
Okay. All right. Welcome back, everybody. And thank you for letting us move you around into breakout rooms. I'm guessing that it was okay to be in your breakout rooms. Anybody want to give a little report or something that you learned in your breakout room? That's what I'll have to do next time, is make everybody report. We'll have enough time next time.
Yeah, and feedback on how that went. That was the first time I facilitated breakout rooms, so please let me know.
you know, in my job, I had to go to we led a Zoom training, and we went into breakout rooms. It was really helpful to have a smaller conversation because it's just so hard to do stuff by Zoom. So next time, we'll actually do this earlier in the class so that there's time to kind of process and talk together as a group about how that went. But I'm hoping it was helpful and that you heard some interesting, you heard how you're not alone in struggling. In struggling with anger and what goes on in your head. And I think one of the most important things to really pay attention to, like this week, is what are the stories that your mind tells you, you know, because part of you, it's also helpful for me to look at just different parts of myself. So part of myself is really upset and it has got a whole story that it's going on with. And another part of me is maybe trying to reel that part back in, right? So right now, what I want to, the homework I'm going to assign, because we're kind of winding down here, and what I want you to think about is ways to try to see as it's arising. Again, right now, before we end class, think about something small that you can have some guaranteed success with, like I had success with my dog, because, you know, I really loved my dog, and this was something that I pretty much could catch myself on. I could also get angry at her, but I knew I would have more success there. So think about something that you will practice on, that you know you're going to have, your chances of being successful are pretty good. Like maybe it's morning drive somewhere that, you know, if you write a note and put it on your steering wheel, you'll have a little bit more success with. Try that rather than something really hard like the evening news or something. You know, try something. And so think about what it is right now that you're going to use. And then, you know, in preparation for these things, or meditate on kind of the shortcomings of losing your patience and the shortcomings of samsara. So as long as I'm in samsara, I will have to experience this kind of problem. Why not use my energy to get out and create the causes for escaping samsara rather than just the causes that continue this cycle? That's something to kind of keep in your mind. And, you know, you can create your own, but we'll talk about this next week too. What are the shortcomings of losing my patience? And what are the benefits of keeping my patience? So try to create a list that works for you, and then I'll give you the regular list. But think about that. Meditating on these things. It's hard just to tell yourself, don't get angry. That's ridiculous. It's not going to work. But if I see, like, again, something like my dog who I loved, her waking me up that night was actually like her being my best friend. You know, she was giving me this chance to, in a safe and successful way, expand my patience. Don't go to the Super Bowl right away. You know, start with just tossing a football around. So think of that thing that you're going to be able to celebrate, and meditating then on this thing that's happening is my friend because it's allowing me to expand my patience. And it's only as we expand our patience that we will be able to, you know, conquer this affliction. Or, and, you know, and Linda and I were talking about how, you know, what does your mind tell you what is one of the stories? But one of the stories, I hope, Linda, you don't mind me sharing, is that, you know, she gets upset with herself, like, oh, why did I go that direction? Why did I think that? Why did I lose my patience there? And I was saying to her that that's in line with what I was saying this earlier today about meditation. That's the moment to celebrate that you noticed it. That's actually fantastic, because that's what life is. It's, you know, in our meditations, we're very rarely just sitting down and zing, 15 minutes of no thought. That's not even the point. So when you notice that, oh, wow, I lost my patience. Also, instead of just berating yourself, I noticed it. How many people actually notice it? A lot of people don't notice it. Or they celebrate that they lost their patience, that they're right, they're righteous. So finding examples, too, of how you can still be working for the elimination of suffering, the empowerment of others, the justice for others, while not losing your patience. You know, that you might need to be, you know, you can find other ways of being determined and persevering in the right cause without losing your patience. So the other thing to meditate on as we try to do this is on compassion. Because of cause and effect, the person who is harming me or angering me or annoying me will experience much worse results in the future. How can I be angry with someone when they're only going to suffer terribly? They're completely possessed with this unpleasant mind that is causing them to suffer. And so that just starts to shift it a little bit for us. And meditating on the emptiness, trying to find the essence of the thing that you're angry about. What exactly is it that's causing your anger? Where does it exist? How does it exist? That's again the way that emptiness helps us to kind of shake up, you know, where are the parts of this anger? Where does it exist? So think about those and see this week, really try to take some notes on this. This is like the other teachers give all kinds of homework about reading all this and writing this. This is just very experiential, practical stuff that you're going to be doing anyway. So just take notes so that when we come back next Monday, we will get into groups earlier and share your notes. These like field notes that we can all use from. Okay, so what we're going to do at the end here, we're just going to do a short meditation on compassion. So get back into your meditative posture and center yourself. Take a few deep breaths. Close your eyes or just keep them barely open. And bring your awareness to your heart center. Your compassion, your ability to love, what an amazing thing. What a profoundly amazing thing that you have the ability to love. And first, just envelop yourself with self-love. If it's easier to imagine like a larger part of yourself hugging and holding and rejoicing in you, and do it that way. Whatever works, just a wiser part of yourself who has so much compassion for the effort that you put into your life. This larger, wiser, forgiving self that's always with you. That cares deeply about your life. And your inner parent for you. Feel that. Feel yourself flooded with that. Care and concern. And as you fill every cell with this, try to expand it out towards the circle of people you know who are in your life, who are easy for you to feel care and love for. And feel it ripple out to the people you don't know, but who you still wish good thoughts, good things for. And feel this compassion, this care, kind of swelling into this larger ocean. It's emanating from you to even the people that you're challenged by, the difficult people in the world, in your life. See them just filled with this same compassion essence. From your heart center throughout the entire world system. Every exhale just expands it further. Every heartbeat expands it further. You are the recipient, the receiver, and the giver all at once. And now as we end the class, take a minute to dedicate all the merit that you have created by attending a class like this on Monday night, just the effort alone. You have created karmic seeds whether you know it or not. But at this point, you have the chance to direct where they will land and grow. So all the merit you created, all the seeds you created by attending, by sharing your thoughts with others, by thinking on this topic, by meditating on this topic, dedicate this merit so that all the obstacles between you and this complete, perfect enlightenment of perfect compassion and perfect wisdom, all the obstacles between you and that state of mind be eliminated quickly. And that's the dedication. And I thank all of you for your patience and your energy. And I will see you next Monday. If you have questions, feel free to, Linda, can they send them to you?
Yes, they can send them to me, to my Discovering Buddhism address. I put it in the chat box last week. I can never remember it. I'm sorry. But it's also online in the document that says about this program from the Kanampa Center website. Just go to, let me get myself on. From the Kanampa Center website, just go to Discovering Buddhism Program Materials, scroll down a ways to Samsara Nirvana. You'll see the homework posted there, and you'll also see the document called About This Module. And at the bottom of that front page of that document is the email address you can use to contact me.
Okay.
So thanks, Steve.
Thanks, everybody. And good luck with the homework. I really look forward to seeing you all Monday. It makes Monday doable for me. All right. Take good care, everybody. Thanks, Linda. I appreciate you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye, everyone. See you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.